problem, problem, create the problem, right? That's why the dentist has a hook. If you don't have a cavity, they make one. Same as our business. Like the poor psychiatrist is the one that says, you're imagining it, Bill. You're a picture of mental health. The rich psychiatrist doesn't say a thing. Writes down 2 pages of notes, reads them back to you, and afterwards says, you know, you've got some issues. Okay, go buy 10 appointments from our assistant. We sort your issues out. Problem, problem, create the problem. Well, the golf pro is the same. You know, they mess up your swing and then they sell you 10 lessons to solve the problem that they caused in the first place. I think that's their business. You'll learn from me. I'm a cynic. I think chiropractors have got a picture of one spine. Like, how do you know it was your spine that they're showing you? Ever thought about that? Anyway. So, this is what you do. And now you have your 10 clients at the Spring Tune-Up Clinic because the golf pro is going to get to sell some lessons to these people. And they bring 20 of their friends, and they're all standing around eating stuffed eggs and pretzels and drinking your drink and going, gee, how good is this? I wish my advisor did more than just send me a calendar in July. Because I'm telling you that there's a very mediocre standard in terms of client engagement, in terms of keeping in touch with people, giving people a different kind of experience. You should have a cappuccino espresso machine in your practice. You should have a menu that sits there that says, these are the drinks that we offer. You should have a plasma screen TV with the name of the client who's coming in that morning. Or, the very least, if you're in a big practice with lots of advisors, you're playing some MDRT videos on that screen instead of CNN and CNBC, which is telling us where the world doesn't go to or isn't going to. So there's a fabulous opportunity for us to give people a different type of experience. An ex-Springbok rugby coach, Harry Viljoen, was not a very good Springbok rugby coach, but he was the biggest insurance broker in the history of the South African industry. And he will tell you that the fact that he found an unemployed person to wash his client's cars in the parking lot outside his office when the clients came in for an annual review, their car was washed. And they'd come back and there'd be a note on the windshield saying, thanks for maintaining your relationship with us. We took the liberty of cleaning your car. And that's what the people would talk about thereafter. So you've got to kind of draw up, you can write this down as a little note to yourself, what I call a why us checklist. I want you to go and do the why us checklist, which is draw up a list of everything you do for your clients. And if any other advisor also does that for their clients, then in the third column, you'd have to put there, it's not unique. What is the uniqueness of this? And sustainable competitive advantage is built when we start doing things uniquely. So I'll give you an example. One of our advisors customizes the front page of his financial needs analysis. Got it? Sorry, I couldn't avoid that. So when he does a financial plan for someone, he goes into Google Images, and he finds out what is this client interested or whatever, and he shows us that recently he went to see a client, and there's the financial plan prepared for Bob and Molly Jones, and there's a picture of a chess piece because the husband is very into chess and the wife is very into bridge, so there's cards, so you've got the bridge cards, and the daughter plays for the Guelph University Bulldogs women's hockey team or whatever. So there's the Guelph University Bulldogs logo, and that's on the front page. Financial plan especially prepared for Bob and Molly Jones. And he tells the story of this millionaire wife that takes a look at this financial plan when they sit down and says to her husband in front of him, I don't know who this guy is or what he's selling, but if you're not buying it, I am. Because of the customized approach to what they do. So we've got to give people a different kind of experience, and we're going to spend some time this afternoon talking around some of those issues. But, you know, as I said this morning, we come to seminars and we come on breakaway sessions, we listen to main platform. I learned something when I saw the late Stephen Covey speak. And we were in Dallas at a convention, and he says, seeing as I were in Dallas, I will tell you a Dallas story. He said there were two salespeople at the National Sales Convention, 5 o'clock day one, having a drink afterwards, and the one guy's phone is ringing the whole time. Ding, ding, ring, ring, bing, bing, and buzzing and vibrating and lighting up. And it's been doing this the whole time. The guy's been in the back of the main platform in the last chairs, and every time his phone lights up or vibrates, he leaves the room. So his friend Roger says to him, he says, John, can't you turn your phone off? He says, no, you don't understand. I can't turn my phone off at the National Convention. He goes, that's my wife contacting me. He says, she hates it when I come to the National Sales Convention. He says, I'm in trouble for 2 months before, and she hates me for 2 weeks after every time. So Roger thinks that kind of funny. So later on, he says, John, can I ask you, how did you and your wife meet? He says, we met at the National Sales Convention 5 years ago while we were married to other people. And Covey put the statement up on the board, which really hit me between the eyes, and maybe it's appropriate in terms of your situation professionally. He says, you cannot talk your way out of problems you behaved your way into. You have to behave your way out of those problems. So some of us in this room are possibly $5,000 away in the next year from earning another 20. Like, I have a philosophy that says you take your trail commission and you spend all of your trail commission, you reinvest that in maintaining the client relationships, that when the client shops with us again during the next 4 years, they shop with you, and that they market you and sell you to their friends. So I give an example. And if you've given me your card, I'll send you the pricing. You deal with those people directly. Ultimate Gift DVD at $6. Lynn's book at 50, and you're into $21. Plus a sample of the plan takes you to $25. Last and final letter, nicely packaged with a wax seal, you're into maybe $30 in total. Well, if you gave that stuff kit style to the accountant, if you gave it to your client in a padded bubble envelope and said, you know, Bob, can we send these tools and resources with an introductory letter from me to three couples in your life who you care about, you're into $30, $30, $30, and people can't throw that away. People can throw a business card away, but when you send a person a book and a DVD and a sample report and some science and math, the advice assessment and a nicely packaged last and final letter, and you say to them, you know, Jack, in my work with Bill Gallagher, financial advisor, you and Molly came to mind as the one couple who would completely relate to the work that he does, and we wanted to send you these resources. And all you're doing is you're asking the person to fill in a name and address on a label, stick it on the padded bubble envelope, you know those big ones you get at the FedEx store or whatever, and you're going to drop that in the post to them. I have an advisor in Toronto right now that's working on $7 million worth of investment money because he gave the accountant five financial resources packs to be able to give to his higher wealth clients. And the one client has $7 million sitting in TD Bank. He's just sold his business, wants to spend 8 months a year in Florida, and he's going to pick up $7 million worth of money from about $30 or $40 worth of stuff. And this is where our brain needs to change in terms of understanding this investment vehicle. So I wanted to sort of spend some time this afternoon on some other things that you could and should be doing. Now here's the thing. You might want to write down there, because I want to give you a template for the rest of your life in terms of all speakers, not just myself. The other people you'll hear, tomorrow, and don't worry about that slide. We'll talk to it in a moment. If you just write down there A, B, and C underneath each other, A, B, and C. Every time I teach a course, every time I run a session, when we coach advisors, when you attend other speakers' sessions as well, an A item, you always walk out with notes. We make notes when we go on seminars. Oh, I must do this, I must send this, I must say this, I must try this, etc. You take my checklist from this morning that I gave you as well as an example, and we'll finish that checklist this afternoon. A items are free, so you might want to write that down. You go and grade your implementation from the symposium at any MDRT meeting or NAFA meeting or company meeting you go to. A items are free, and free is a good price. So would you agree that if I tell you you've got to say something to a client, like I help protect middle-aged people from their parents, or I would even say the post-it note with the letter E that goes on the signature strip to remind us to say to the client what the expiry date on your financial plan, it's free, right? B items are simple. They take a little bit of time. Like, it would probably take a little bit of time for you to go and take a box of 20 books and go and visit with each one of your top 20 clients and explain that the next phase in their financial planning is the family meeting, which you need to convene to make sure that there aren't issues which impair or affect the financial direction of all family members. It's actually a simple item because it just takes a bit of time. You're going to get a return on the cost of the books. And C items are things that are expensive, that cost money. So not everybody in this room is going to do what one of my attendees does right now, which is that he has a gourmet evening, and he goes out there and he says to his clients every fall, look, we're going to have a Valentine's in November, and you might write that concept down, Valentine's in November, and he gets the German club or the Swiss club or the French club. We've all got these sort of cultural specific clubs in town where you can bring your own chef. Then he gets a 22-year-old kid from the culinary school, the cooking school, and he says, look, I know you need work for your portfolio. Can you come and do a gourmet evening for my clients? And someone else is coming in to do the wine pairings, and he gets his client base, and he says to them, look, Anyone who puts me in the room with three couples who spend 30 minutes exchanging ideas with me about their financial direction, not three couples who become my client, three couples who spend 30 minutes exchanging some ideas about their financial direction, you get to bring each one of those couples to this amazing gourmet evening. And he sends out pictures of the food, descriptions of the food. He's got a person playing the cello in the corner. And he puts about 100 couples at the Portuguese Club in the room, of which one third of them are his current clients and 66% or more of them are not. And, you know, at the cost of the food, well, that can cost you, that evening could cost you several thousand dollars. The reality is we're going to get it back from the first client. But those are what I call C items, which is things that cost us a significant amount of money. So let me give you some free stuff. And there's a lot of information on these slides. Please use 80-20 thinking, folks. A lot of people come out of my sessions and they go, my golly, he throws a lot of stuff at you. I feel like I've been sucking on a fire hose for the last 2 hours. I was thanked that way last week. I don't know if that's a compliment. I feel like I sucked on a fire hose. Use 80-20. Three concepts from me, two from this morning. It's enough. Richard Koch changed my life. I read a book by him called The 80-20 Principle. I didn't read the whole book. I read 20% of the book and I got 80% of the message. You don't have to read the whole book. But 80-20 has been around forever. So if you learn nothing from me today, it's what's on your electronic stationery. It's what's on the back of your business card. I see people who got business cards and it says, we do mutual funds, we do life insurance, we do DI, we do CI, we can help you with your group plan, we can also help you with your 401k, and it can help you with your mortgage too. Boring. It's like, who cares, right? On the back of your business card, if you were to put there, prescription without diagnosis is malpractice. What does your written financial plan look like? That kind of drives a conversation with people. Because it is. Does the dentist first take a picture of the root canal before they start drilling and filling? Absolutely. Everybody does this, yet we're the only business in the world where we can actually go in there, do a transaction with a person to do with their money, have nothing to do with them thereafter, and maybe send them a birthday card without having to do a diagnosis. It's not always going to be that way. And I'm going around North America telling advisors, if you're not doing a structured, documented diagnosis and plan for the client before you sell solutions, you've got about 5 to 7 years left in this business. In the province of Quebec in Canada right now, you will lose your license if you didn't document the advice at every single point. You can't sell any financial product unless you've created or crafted a plan or documented a trail of advice. So these are the things that become important. I got the second little tagline, which you can use in your emails, 10% of gross annual income multiplied by your current age equals net worth, from a book called The Millionaire Next Door, which is very expensive. It's $5 on Amazon right now. So you carry The Millionaire Next Door around with you and you say, you know, would you like to know how millionaires become millionaires? Well, you use the wealth creation formula. 10% of gross annual income multiplied by your current age should be your current net worth, or you are a UAW, an under-accumulator of wealth. When I said that in Detroit recently, they burst out laughing because UAW stands for United Auto Workers in Detroit. Now, aren't you tired of hearing these words? Because here comes another freebie. I'm going to give you a lot of stuff this afternoon that doesn't cost you money to use and to implement. Aren't you tired of hearing from people on the phone already have a financial advisor? Do you get that from people when you phone them? I can see some of you nodding. Some of you have given up in advance and stopped asking for referrals, so you're not phoning people? What's going on? Help me here. How many of us are phoning people on referral? Okay. What do we say when we phone them? Because I'm going to spend some time on that this afternoon too. Because I'm going to suggest that some of the things that we say to people when we phone them on referral are all of the wrong things, and we can reshape and work with that a little bit. But if we get the objection from a person, I already have a financial advisor, I already have an insurance agent, we already have life insurance, whatever. These are the words that we strongly encourage you to use. That's great, that's awesome, that's wonderful. We must enthuse. Our energy needs to increase at that point. I'm relieved to hear that you've received advice elsewhere. Would you like to pressure test the advice you've been getting? I'd like to send you our advice assessment checklist. You take 2 minutes to go through it, and if you don't see anything interesting, I'll go away and stop wasting your time. Does that sound fair? And everything has been very scientifically worked through here. Because we're finishing the sentence by saying, does that sound fair, the person isn't being fair if they don't agree at that point. So you've got to use the right words, and let me give you the advice assessment. You can use this, and it has been compliance approved by every compliance department I've ever worked with. The advice assessment looks like this. It's a 10-point checklist that addresses most of the issues in most people's financial life. There are very few prospects who will pass this test. So, I mean, let's just look at question number one. Has a written financial plan been documented and updated at least annually to adjust for changed circumstances, market trading conditions, and latest carrier solutions? Check yes, check no. Based on your own response to my survey this morning, a minority of people would be able to answer in the affirmative there. Is the life insurance program inclusive of fully comprehensive critical illness benefits as opposed to just being payable on death? What about number four? Was the appropriate inflation indexing used in creating and funding the plan? Because doctors, pills, hospitals, and Caribbean cruises go up by a lot more than 2 or 3% a year. Bread, butter, and milk goes up by 2 or 3% a year. But when we're 70 and 80, we shop from a basket of doctors, pills, hospitals, and Caribbean cruises more than we do out of bread, butter, eggs, and milk. So we've probably got to use around about 5% inflation indexing when we talk about people's plan when they're 70 and 80 years old. Was the appropriate life expectancy used in creating and funding the plan? Because if you inherit your parents to live from 85 to 92, when you are 60 to 67, it can collapse your financial plan. Please start telling people, by the way, I don't want your parents as a client. I'm probably going to send them back to the bank, but at least I'll send them back to the bank with a waterproof and a bulletproof plan. When can I get together with your parents? What are the other things? Have the necessary allowances been made for legacy contributions to grandchildren's financial well-being? Are there estate plan distributions arranged with or without values guidelines? Has a family meeting been convened? So you can use this advice assessment to open the door with prospects. I have advisors, and you can do this, who print the advice assessment on nice thick cardstock, and it becomes a nice giveaway or something to hand to a person when you're at the neighborhood barbecue, when you're at the kids' soccer, because I think sometimes we only have a few moments when a person does talk to us about who we are, what we do, to be able to give that person something that is intriguing, disturbing, and upsets the status quo. Let's not back away from our responsibility to ourselves to stir things up and to disturb a little bit. I think that we've tended to, because of a hyper-regulated environment, maybe been talked out of the competitive edge that we need to have in this business. One has to break the current advice relationship before the work can be done. And you know something? If one doesn't break the advice relationship, then we end up with a state of confusion with the client. So use the advice assessment. I have some advisors that hand that out at lunch and learns. They make it the subject of a newsletter. I mean, let's just think for a second about your year-end planning letter from our relationship so far today. Maybe your year-end planning letter for your clients is not just going to talk about 401ks and the health insurance debate. It's going to talk about the importance of a last and final letter and that there should be one in your family safe or safety deposit box. There should be a family meeting convened. I'll facilitate it next year. What about building some values into your estate planning with the correct kind of trust work? Here's a sample, and by the way, I'd love to give you a Christmas gift called the movie or whatever. What about pressure testing the advice your parents have been receiving? What about the fact that if you're not on an ISP, an inheritance spending plan, you should be buying your kids as much life insurance as you can afford for them right now. They'll take over premium payment. The conversion on the 20-year term will happen in 19 years' time or whatever. This becomes the subject of a year-end planning letter. In fact, I have a friend in Australia. His name is Martin Grunstein. You know, the Australians don't quite have the same accent as the South Africans. Don't get confused. Theirs is a little bit more whiny, you know. And Martin Grunstein sends his clients, write this idea down for you. He sends his clients a Happy November 25th card. So he goes to the UPS store, and they design greeting cards there, and he sends them a nice big Happy November 25th card. And it says on the front, Happy November 25th. And he sends it about the 15th of November every year. And you open it up and says, you're probably going to get many happy December 25th cards, but I wanted to be the first to wish you. Have a wonderful festive season. Early as usual, your friend Martin Grunstein. And he's got some business cards enclosed, and he says, please share the enclosed cards with your friends and colleagues who you show this card to. And you would do the same thing, but include your year-end planning letter in there, which could cover some of the issues which we've raised today, and encourage people to photocopy your year-end planning letter and forward it to other people. Why would you do a year-end planning letter covering off some of these issues? Just so that you can show your year-end planning letter to next year's prospect before you even go and see them. So the year-end planning letter covering these issues we've talked about so far today becomes your cross-selling tool to be able to cover off on a number of important issues with next year's client. That's why we do some of the things we do. We write articles, okay? We take pictures of lunch and learns and seminars. We take pictures of our clients and ourselves in our office so that we can create a certain amount of marketing momentum behind what we do. So if you're with me so far, let's continue the conversation here. Family members, how many of us, by a show of hands, have honestly approached all of our family members and everybody in our social circle about our work and offered your service to them? Let's see, by a show of hands. A couple of tentative hands going up. Now, remember that Mr. Gallagher said you must be nice to them in Utah. Here comes the second time I'm going to get in your face. Shame on you. What is it about us that we've got relatives and friends and we haven't yet approached them? So I'm giving you the slide here. It's a magnificent campaign. You might want to write it down. It's a good one for about October or November. It's called a family and friends campaign. And it says George, obviously, if the relative's name is George. If it's Paul, you would put Paul in at that point. There's something I've been wanting to run by you for quite some time, but was reluctant to make you feel uncomfortable in any way. This will arouse some curiosity. You remove those brackets, folks. Okay? That's my note to you. As you might already realize, it is some pretty important work for my clients. I help them gain a high level of confidence, clarity, and control over their personal finances. Obviously, this type of work is very personal and confidential, and I just want to make sure that whatever advice you're currently getting is as complete and of the highest caliber possible. Would you be open to sitting down with me at some point for a complimentary assessment of your situation? And I promise that no other members of our family, Rotary Club, Wednesday night beer, hockey league, soccer club, church, whatever, will become privy to our conversation. And that becomes an important email for us to send out to everybody in our BlackBerry, Android, or iPhone who we haven't approached about our business. One could obviously attach to that email a sample, a PDF of a sample financial plan, the advice assessment, and now you can be offering that book or that DVD as a giveaway to the person when you visit with them to exchange some ideas. And there's a whole lot, everything you've seen on the slides I'm going to send to you. One long set of slides, okay? So you don't have to write it down. So yes, that becomes a campaign that you send out to people. Do you know why a lot of us haven't approached our family and friends? You did the Project 200, which was the list of potential victims when you joined the industry, right? So you had to make that list. A lot of us didn't transact with more than about 20% or 10 or 15% of that Project 200 when we first came into the business, because the way that we engaged them or communicated with them was kind of ragged and kind of rough and kind of disjointed. We kind of went to Uncle Bob, you know, across the Thanksgiving table and said, you know, you wouldn't by any chance be interested in having me have a look at the insurance that you have, would you? And he goes, no, I'm good. I'm with, State Farm or New York Life or whatever. I'm good. And you go, okay, I thought I'd ask, right? Why? Because he was not going to give you access to his money or give you his keys to his financial kingdom when you had been at Xerox until 3 months ago. Because how do you become an expert in financial affairs when you were just at Xerox 3 months ago? The sad thing for a lot of us in this room is we've forgotten to engage those people and go back to those people and let those people know that we're actually pretty successful right now. We're a dues-paying member of NAFL. We're a million-dollar roundtable qualifier. So I'm going to suggest that you go back to all of those people in a simple concept I want to give you for November, let's say. Because December is when Grandma comes to town, and there's lots of families that gather over the festive season. It's a really cool time to do some important work. Declare November to be your anniversary month. Seriously. Unless everybody knows when you did join this industry 15 years ago. So you go back to that Project 200 and you say, it's anniversary month. I've now been in this business 10, 15, 20, or 25 years. And as part of our anniversary celebrations, I'm coming past the door of all of those who never got an opportunity to work with me during my first couple of years in the business. Here's some tools, attachments, resources, special reports, assessments, etc. I'm going to be, I'd love to visit with you on a Thursday afternoon or on a Tuesday evening. You choose which one suits you better. And then you phone those people and let them know. Do you know that half of the people in your social circle and extended family circle have not transacted with you? I'm going to tell you why, according to our research, is because they don't know that you're still taking on referrals. They think that your clients line up with their social security card and their checkbook at 9 o'clock every morning outside the door of your shop, waiting for the shop to open so that they can throw their money at you. And the reason that they're laboring under that perception, which is a false one, is because we've forgotten to ask them for the last 10 or 15 years. We've forgotten to try again and get back to those people. I have some advisors who take the books and DVDs that we talked about and sit with couples and say, do you know the neighbors next door? Would you mind if we rang their doorbell? I'd sure love to introduce myself to them and give them a complimentary copy of these financial resources. And the business just takes over and gets a different level of momentum going. So do consider that. Let's talk about the phone. Had an advisor recently told me that this is what he says on the telephone when he phones prospective clients. Good afternoon, Bob. This is Richard Jones calling from Investors Group. How are you today? Have I caught you at a bad time? Was this a convenient time to talk? And I had to say to him, there's about four or five things wrong with that. So he was a little bit offended and surprised. I said, well, let's really dissect this. I said, first of all, don't tell people which company you're phoning from before the end of the period of the first or second sentence. You don't have to. I said, if the name has got anything to do with insurance, investments, or anything else, the person's brain shuts down. They go, market's too volatile. I don't have any money anyway. I'm not interested. And they've tuned out. So let's stop telling people immediately what it is that we do or where we're from. How are you today? Leon Morris says most people's life is lousy, and when you say how are you, you remind them of that fact. And how this person is has got nothing to do with you. You are a stranger. So stop telling people how you are. Have I caught you at a bad time? Well, the person wasn't thinking it was a bad time, so now we've introduced an objection which they weren't having in the first place. Instead of phoning the person saying, Bob Jones, Anthony Morris here, Bill Gallagher asked me to give you a call. When we did some work recently, your name came up in conversation. In fact, he spoke rather highly of you. Bill seems to think that some of the ideas on tax preservation and wealth creation and risk management you'd find incredibly useful, but he suggested that a man of your position in the community has got, if not one, an entire team of financial advisors. I'm really making the call on the request of Bill, who's recommended we get together for 30 minutes to exchange some ideas. But what I'd like to do initially, because we don't work with everybody, is send you some financial tools and resources. You take a look at if there's anything interesting, and I'll call back and check in with you in a couple of weeks' time. Does that sound fair? And it's a much more embracing and warm and engaging way of opening a conversation. But what is the key thing that I did there? I got Bill Gallagher's name inserted really, really quickly in the conversation. And the whole thing's going to become Bill's fault. Watch this space. Okay, make the whole thing Bill's fault. Well, I just don't have time for this. Well, Bill suggested that you're a busy person, and I don't necessarily want to waste each other's time. That's why the first meeting will be 20 minutes, because within 20 minutes, we'll see whether there's a need to have a second meeting or not. Would Thursday morning or afternoon suit you better? Well, I already have life insurance. I respect that completely, and I'll bear it in mind for next week. Would Thursday morning or afternoon suit you better? Well, I just think you're wasting your time. I have absolutely no interest. I apologize. Bill must have been wrong when he identified you as the one person who would completely relate to our unique style of planning. I'll let Bill know. I'm sorry for taking your time. And then I'll phone Bill and let him know. And I say, I spoke to Joe and he was rather short with me. In fact, he didn't give me much of a chance to finish. But I wanted to thank you anyway for trying. By the way, while I've got you on the phone, Bill, is there anyone more suited in your life who should spend some time with me sharing some ideas? You see, we've lost a certain courage and fearlessness in this building, in this business. We've got to get back to that. There are three types of business. I want to share this with you. If you look at you want to do a quick little diagnosis of your practice. And this is an important exercise I get people to do. What percentage of your current income in the last 12 months is what I call repeat business? And let me define repeat business. Let's say that Bill over there gets... I get a phone call from him saying, I've got a new business partner. His name is Sam. Julie sold her shares. Sam needs a 200 grand policy. Will you please see him? I call that repeat business, not referral business. It's a transaction. The need is established. I'm going to walk in, fill in some forms. Medicals will happen, and the business goes on the books. So by my definition, repeat business is, of course, trail commissions as well. So take a look at this and say, what percentage of your income in the last year was repeat business? Of course, the ultimate practice is where you just have repeat business from all of your clients and you never need to look elsewhere again. What percentage of your business is referral business over all the dollars that you banked or grossed in the last year? Percentage-wise, are you getting enough referrals in front of you? And you've got to have referral competitions. We've got to go out to people and say to them, I'm offering my clients an opportunity to go and enjoy Valentine's in New York in February. And would you like to introduce me to people, put me in front of people? Would you assist me by making introductions, sending this note, sending this letter out, etc.? And of course, reputational business are the other things that we do. Reputational business are the trade shows that we run. Reputational business are the lunch and learns. It's the seminars. It's the fact that we're out there, we're writing in the local newspapers. We're out there and we're interacting and we're networking. We're attending events where people of wealth gather. I mean, in my first year at Liberty Life, no one told me not to join the Everard Reed Art Gallery because it was across the road from our offices. So I joined the Everard Reed Art Gallery and I put on my suit, and when I saw those fancy cars pulling up for an art exhibition, man, I could art with the best of them. I could. I'd stand there swilling my French champagne, staring at that blotch of orange on the wall. And I'd say, it's not his finest work. I thought he'd come by to see what he's up to. You know, and the people that used to go, because if you can afford $15,000 for a blotch of orange on the wall, I'm sorry, I'm a capitalist. I want some of that. No one taught me that I shouldn't go to Dave Abramovitz at the Cape Town Royal Cape Yacht Club, who was selling multi-million dollar yachts, and walk in there with attitude. I was wet behind the ears, but I had attitude. And I walked in and said, Mr. Abramovitz, Anthony Morris from Liberty Life, and I deal mostly with millionaires. Do you have an interest in them? And he said, yes, I'm interested in millionaires. I said, well, if I could bring some of my millionaires down, we went on a sunset cruise and you gave them some nice snacks and some nice liquor and we take them out and take them out on a two-hour cruise, I'll get them to bring their friends. Maybe some of them will buy your boats because I'm pretty sure you're interested in selling boats to these people. And he thought that was a fabulous idea. And I would phone up my top five clients and say, we're going on a sunset cruise for 2 hours. Meet us at Royal Cape. I've sent you your complimentary tickets for the three or four other people in your life who you'd like to bring along as well. And it was win, win, win. We've got to market ourselves. The weak link in this business is not selling. Do you know that most of us in this room probably know enough technically to earn twice as much money? But just think about that statement for a second. We know enough technically right now to earn twice as much money, but we're maybe not there because we're not intriguing or disturbing or getting to the point with the client quickly enough. So I'll share something conceptual and fun and simple which you can do to get to the point quickly enough. And it's something that you actually want to do with your clients potentially. The Wall Street Journal had a piece of research, a research survey about 5-6 months ago. I was flying out of Buffalo, picked up the Buffalo newspaper, and it reported that according to the Wall Street Journal that week, in a survey of United States citizens, some 49% of couples in the United States have a fundamental disagreement about the day that the retirement is going to happen in that house. In other words, they don't agree on the day that the retirement's going to happen. And 51% of couples disagree about the amount of dollars that needs to be available on that day to fund income right to the end of life. So you can take the 49 and 51 and average it to 50-50. So according to the Wall Street Journal survey, well, that's just a survey, but then what do we do about it? So here's the concept for you. And you know, you can always complicate afterwards. Okay? Johnny Cochran won the O.J. Simpson trial on the simplest, most beautiful piece of legal wizardry ever, okay? If the glove doesn't fit, you have to acquit. If the glove doesn't fit, you have to acquit. So I don't know about you folks, but I'm no DNA scientist, and I was confused by that blood of evidence on the second day. All I know is this Mr. Furman over here, okay? Mr. Furman, they built this whole case on this bloody glove. Well, my client tried on the glove and it doesn't fit. Well, OJ's agent wrote a book, if you read the book. It says they took him off his arthritis medication 2 weeks before, knowing that his hands would swell to twice the size, ensuring the glove didn't fit, right? Doesn't matter. Johnny Cochran's not with us anymore, but was he a salesman extraordinaire? You better believe it. Because the chances, according to the blood evidence, OJ wasn't guilty, was 1 in 5.5 times the population of the planet Earth. Like, go figure. But Marsha Clark and Chris Darden were grumpy afterwards, right? Because they took all this DNA science and he just said, glove didn't fit in his hand, you have to let him go. you've read some recent books, you'll understand that Jason Simpson did it, not OJ, but I don't want to go there because I haven't got 3 hours this afternoon. So here's what you do. You have to simplify. Please, people, when you go to Staples to buy those post-it notes, to put the letter E on to talk about the expiry date on the plan, the same post-it notes that you're going to put on the sample plan saying share this spare copy with your colleagues who you care about, remember this morning session, I want you to go and get some plain 3x5 cards. Plain 3x5 cards. This is compliance approved by all the companies. You can still hand out plain 3x5 cards. And what you put on the one card is his, and you put on the other card is hers, right? And then you put a number one, is called the date of the retirement, and number two, the amount of dollars that need to be delivered on that day. And when you visit with Bob and Molly in their kitchen, in their dining room, and she offers you a drink, as they do, good people, okay, courteous people will say, you know, Bill, would you like a cup of coffee? Thank you, Molly, I'd love a cup of coffee. And Molly, while you're in the kitchen, won't you please write down the date that the retirement is happening in this house and the amount of dollars or assets that need to be delivered on that day? And Bob, you stay here and you do your version. And according to the Wall Street Journal, 50% of the time, you'll be able to take those two cards when you're sitting in front of that couple and you go, my job is to bring these two closer together because we have a disagreement here. Creating and managing tension is such an important part of the sales process. Such an important part. That life insurance formula I showed you this morning, I want you to go and show it to your clients because they go and show that party trick to their friends. But don't give away the punchline before you've told the joke. Don't say to the person, how much life coverage you got? 300 grand. 4% of that is 12 grand. Can you live off that a year? Because you gave away the punchline before you told the joke. Make them go through the process of crossing off the zeros, doubling the numbers, and ending up at 7.2%, which is unrealistic in terms of returns. Here's another campaign I'm giving you to do, and the people who don't choose my afternoon session will be totally confused when they get their slides, but so be it. You're here. I want you to take a sample of the client's financial situation. Now, if you've done a financial plan, that's good. If you're not doing financial plans and you can't produce a copy of their last plan, summarize 2 pages of what's going on in their life. Bob and Molly Jones, Bob's on 85K gross per year, Molly's on 55K. They live at 325 William Street. They have children of this age. They have a mortgage on their home. They have these assets. A 2-page summary, which your assistant could and should be doing. So the assistant prepares the summary, and you take 100 clients and you split them out into 25 per quarter. So you'd send out to 25 clients in September, another 25 clients in December. This summary of their situation, I'm not just talking about what life insurance products they bought from you or what investments you hold under your management. I'm talking about where they work, where they live, the assets that they have, the kids, etc. And you send it out with this letter that I'm giving you in a padded bubble envelope. The reason we do this in a padded bubble envelope is because you want to include the highlighter pen with the self-addressed stamped envelope back to you. Because Americans don't throw stamps in the trash. And hopefully your clients aren't so small that they take that stamp and the kettle and they'd steam the stamp off the envelope, right? So you put a self-addressed stamped envelope back to you in there with the highlighter pen. So they get this. If I send you knobbly mail, you'll open the knobbly mail first, right? I guarantee you'd open that padded bubble envelope. Out comes the highlighter pen with this letter and the list of what they've done or their financial plan, and you're basically saying to them, would you please, I've enclosed the facts as reviewed at your last, that you shared with me last year. Please set a few moments aside to review the report we prepared and highlight any changes which may influence the results you're achieving. For ease of convenience, I've included a highlighter pen and please assist me in making your business and family dreams come true whilst protecting the risks along the way. I've provided a stamped self-addressed envelope, and I'm even giving you the checklist here, because what do you need? The bubble envelope, the highlighter pen, self-addressed stamped envelope. Identify your name and address on the back, and off you go. And if the person doesn't complete it, they've got to get a phone call. There's the phone call. We sent you an important exercise, or you send them a text to say, please do complete that exercise. We did this with some 50 brokers I was coaching. Halfway through my one-year program, I said to them, I want you to send this out to 100 clients. They transacted with 17% of those clients within the next 6 months. because there are babies being born and things happening in your clients' lives and parents being diagnosed critically ill, which will cause mayhem financially in that family, and inheritances and people that are passing and homes that are being bought and new mortgages that are acquired in our current client base as we sit here. And I think that we sometimes tend to overestimate the client's loyalty towards us unless we have invested really, really heavily in these ongoing campaigns and these keep-in-touch tools and strategies we've talked about. Our clients don't really think of us all the time. They don't really think of us all the time. They don't go, oh, we've just had a third child. That's changed the formula that we use to calculate how much life insurance we need. We really need to contact Bill and see him about increasing our life insurance. They move house, okay? We'll hear about the address change, but they'll go, certainly where I'm from in Canada, and buy the really special thing called the bank-owned mortgage insurance, which hardly ever pays out because it was underwritten at the point of death. And they won't even think about what they've done by buying that wrong kind of coverage. So this is a good strategy for you to send out to your clients, and it's followed up with a phone call to say, please complete the list. Even if there have been no changes in your life, it's important that we keep up to date with your changing circumstances. Third last idea of the day, and you might want to check this off the list if you're still carrying it from this morning, or just make a note. I'm known as the birthday cakes guy. Okay, whenever I work with groups, they kind of hire that the guy talks about the birthday cakes. I'm giving you the website of our cake designer in Cambridge, Ontario. Our cake designer in Cambridge does not deliver to Provo or to Wyoming or to wherever you're from, Salt Lake City. But you can show this website to your local cake boss. I guarantee there's a cake boss within about a 25-minute drive of this campus who will make beautiful, gorgeous, custom cakes, right? So, that's my friend Scuba Steve. I'm not a normal South African. Most of the South Africans, when they immigrate to Canada, they'll all move into what I call the South African ghetto called Thornhill. And they all live next to each other in Thornhill, Toronto, and they all talk about South Africa and the old times. I'm an integrated Canadian. Okay, I'm a Habs fan. If I start dribbling this afternoon, it's from the antidepressants kicking in, because Habs aren't doing so well these days, but hopefully we'll do fine if they don't lock them out the whole season. Okay, most of my friends in Cambridge, Ontario are blue-collar working, Wednesday night beer hockey league, staple gun-carrying, local Union 35, tattooed and damn proud of it kind of dudes, right? They are not people who read the Wall Street Journal, I need to tell you. They are not people who will read a science or math report about what Moshe Malevsky says about order of returns in retirement. They're real simple folks. This is my friend Scuba Steve. He's a Jägermeister drinking dude, right? So that was his birthday cake. That cake cost us $65. Well, here's a concept for you. You do a nice case. It's a $500,000 policy. You take $100,000 of the person's money under your management. You go and look at debt consolidation strategies to free up income. You do the college planning, the retirement planning, whatever it might be, planning with a person. Send a nice cake into that client's place of work with a big dollar sign on the cake. The wording on the cake should say, thanks for being clever. There should be your logo on the cake, and I would not send that cake in for compliance approval because it'll become stale by the time it comes back. I would just apologize afterwards in asking for permission in advance, but that's why I have to go back to Canada tomorrow when I come here and cause trouble for you. I would put your logo on the cake as well. You put the wording there, thanks for being clever, and a big dollar sign. It's nicely done in fondant. If your corporate colors are blue, it's a blue and white cake. If they're green, it's a green and white cake. And you'll find that at the dollar store, you can buy this plastic insert. They sell them. It's like a Tupperware plastic insert, and 20 of your business cards go in there. And when you've done a case where you earned $1,000 or $1,500 commission, you send in, unless you want to drop it off yourself. This is what assistants are for, by the way. You send in the cake with a box of Starbucks coffee and 15 cups, 11 o'clock in the morning, and I would phone Bill, my client, and say, Bill, just checking, or I'd phone Bill's assistant. Mary, I'm just checking if Bill's there. I wanted to drop off a little surprise. Yes, he's going to be here for the next couple of hours. And so in goes the cake and the coffee, shuts the place down. Everybody who last received a calendar 3 years ago from their advisor based on the mediocrity of your competitors, maybe got a birthday card, everybody's standing around, hold on a second, take a picture of it, put it on Facebook, want to Twitter the cake and all the other things with the cake, and they're kind of eating the cake going, gee, how good is this? I wish my financial advisor did more than just phone me once every 3 years when they need me. And you know something? The business pours through the door. I have an advisor right now who picked up $900,000 worth of money, one telephone call he got last August. I've never heard of a financial advisor that brings cake and coffee to their clients to thank them. And I'm taking early retirement next in 3 months' time, and I expect you not to tell my staff, and I'd like you to come and tell me what to do with the $900,000. If you don't want to go the cakes route, if you're into, do you have edible arrangements here? Edible arrangements? I'm very into edible arrangements. Those fruit trees, the thing about edible arrangements is they have to pass it around and share it with their colleagues, because if the edible arrangement arrives at 10 in the morning, the fruit is slimy by 5 o'clock that night. So your arrangement with edible arrangements needs to be that when they deliver the $65 bouquet of nice fruit and melon and chocolate-covered strawberries, there need to be 20 of your business cards with a card from you that says, please share the enclosed cards with your colleagues who you share the fruit with. Thank you for supporting my practice. And the client will violate their own privacy and tell people how clever you were in terms of what you've done for them in terms of financial planning. And remember that 25% of people that you befriend are going to visit, are going to transact with this industry anyway. So you can do the 2 day before your birthday cake. You can do edible arrangements. You can do muffins or whatever. I wanted to kind of tie this together with something that I'm very passionate about. And then I'm going to show you a quick little video clip. I am very, very passionate about us getting into those better clients, those higher wealth clients. I spend a lot of time and I'm good friends with Bruce Etherington in Canada. And Bruce is pretty much the rock star of philanthropic giving. Everybody who knows Bruce closely knows that he's got $1 billion worth of policies on the books that'll pay out to Canadians, not-for-profits and foundations and charities when his clients die. Just try and figure out what the Trail Commission is on $1 billion worth of policies. Your calculator will explode in a puff of white smoke. Okay, that's why Bruce is smiling so much. So he started in 2000 and finished in 2010 in $100 million worth of philanthropic policies. He has clients that have that do $350,000 worth of annual premiums. Well, just think about this for a second if I can expand your thinking. When I go and buy a bottle of wine at the LCBO, which is our, we have a nationalized chain of beer stores. You can't buy from an independent where I'm from in Canada there. They always ask you for a buck for the United Way. I don't know if they do that at any stores here. Would you like the grocery store? Would you like to donate $1 to the United Way? Would you like to donate $2 to sick kids? I never say no. I never say no. Because something in my brain says I'm going to be standing there with some vintage Australian wine, $75, and they're going to say, do you want to donate $1 to the United Way? I'm going to say, actually, I have my own philanthropic giving strategy within my estate plan, and no, I don't want to give a buck to the sick kids. You try and do that, someone will smack you and go, you scumbag, you. Right? Well, now add some zeros to that example. A client is worth $20 million, $30 million, or $40 million. Give an example, there was a guy at a barbecue in my house brought by some other people in Cambridge. He's worth $50 million, Canadian. He's 52 years old. He was a pioneer in the asbestos removal business. Big business, right? Took the business over from his dad when he was 22. Sold it 24 months ago. And he's worth $50 million at age 52. If one had a conversation with him about the stock markets, one would be starting off on the wrong footing with him. Because he doesn't have 1 cent in the stock market. $25 million is deployed in building shopping centers and commercial real estate in Cambridge and Guelph and Kitchener and Waterloo in southwestern Ontario. And the other $25 million is deployed in private mortgages. So if you need a quick 50 or 100 grand on your house and you're willing to pay 12% on that money, or you can pick up the check in 72 hours. Just go to the lawyer and sign. And I don't care if you've got a credit score of 3. As long as I can see the bricks and see the value of the place and have you understand, I'll have you and your family on the sidewalk. In 18 days, I'll foreclose if you bounce one check, if you bounce one payment on me. So how sure are you that you'll have the money back for me next year? Then there's plenty of folks in this economy that'll pay 10% or 12% to access a quick 50 to 100K. Could be a business owner that needs cash flow or whatever. He says, you know the great thing about it, all these investment advisors? He says, I drive down entire streets and entire suburbs, and I go, I own that house, and I own that house, and I own that house, and I own that house. And until one of these investment people can show me a way of getting 12 points on my money, guaranteed, rock solid, on $25 million, well, let's look at that person. Do you suppose that just by showing up next year, he's not worth $50 million, he's now worth $53 million? And just by showing up the next year, he's now worth $57 million? Well, could you convince a person like that to take $8,000 a month, $6,000 a month, and leave behind a legacy? Absolutely. So I want to close today's session with my piece on charitable giving and tell you how you can do more of this practically in your business. First of all, there's the question you've got to ask. And I would encourage you to ask your business owners, can you show me, Bob, what you're doing through your estate plan to give back to the community who put you where you are as a business owner? Can you show me through your estate plan what you're doing to give back to the community who put you where you are as a business owner? And you know, some of you found advisors that have the charitable philanthropy conversation with their clients are seen in a different light to advisors who just try and go in and sell some stuff. Now, of course, I'm always going to be the one who gives you the tool about what I need you to do. So I need you to change your business card. Okay, we won't call it a business card. We'll just call it your other card. So while you're at Staples buying the 3x5 card to do the his and hers, before you buy the post-it notes to put on the samples of plans we talked about earlier, you can buy some plain white business cards at Staples. Don't put your securities license number on there. Don't put your name. Don't put your logo on there. It's just your other card. On the one side of the other card, we put there the best way to help the underprivileged is to make sure that you're not one of them. If you don't find the word offensive, then you can call it the best way to help the poor is to make sure that you're not one of them. And on the back of the card, to keep the conversation going, and then to rearrange your estate planning to give back massively to less fortunate folks using other people's money. Whose money? New York Life's money, Guardian's money, Mass Mutual's money, etc. Now, in 1999, at the MDRT meeting in New Orleans, the first time I ever spoke at MDRT, was anyone at the 1999 New Orleans meeting? Well, there was a guy there by the name of Bill Strickland, William Strickland. And I'm going to send you, together with the follow-up from today, I'm going to send you where you can buy this DVD from MDRT directly. And he did a talk that absolutely rocked my world and changed my life. He's a 6'9" ex-basketball player. He says, I went on the streets of Pittsburgh, and I saw single welfare moms, and I saw retrenched steel workers. And I saw kids going to school without books under their arms. And I thought, man, there's something wrong with this picture. Kids are going to school without books. Is this what the country's become? He says, so someone saved my life with clay and ceramics and pottery when I was 5, and I wanted to pay it forward and give it back. He says, so I raised a bunch of money from the corporates, and I went and built an art center in the middle of the worst part of Pittsburgh, which is exactly where it belongs. He says, my art center's got no locks on the door, no drug and alcohol people on the staff, no policemen outside. We ain't got metal detectors either. He says, we're 400 meters up the road from the Pittsburgh public school system, where they've got policemen outside, drug and alcohol people on the staff, and they've got metal detectors and burglar bars on the window. He says, it's amazing when you drag the poor kids in off the street and you give them gourmet food and treat them with love and dignity and respect, how they shine and how they blossom. He says, and then the moms came and said, you can't teach the kids about art and ceramics and painting when they're hungry. So we opened a little kitchen. The mommies took gourmet cooking courses, and we started feeding this gourmet food to the kids. He said, then I figured out that, you know, besides the expense of art, I was now selling to GlaxoSmithKline, Wellcome, and the Bank of America and IBM for their boardroom, because my art is expensive from the kids for your boardroom. So we there's contracts to sell this art to these corporates. He says, we also started tendering for their food service programs, their company cafeterias, boardroom lunches. He says, and then my friend John Hines came by. You've heard of him. He makes ketchup, the late Senator Hines. He says, that trout almondine you fed me at lunchtime, William, was incredible. Do you guys do any industrial catering? He says, no. He says, well, I was thinking that if you built a very big kitchen over here, you could actually train minorities for the food service industry, because we can't get minorities interested enough in food science, and Heinz needs to hire more of these people. And he said, look, Senator, it's a great concept, but the building's finished and the paint is dry. I'd sure love it if you'd support our program, though. And Heinz looked at him and said, if I cut you a check for $1 million this afternoon, could I change your mind? He says, Senator, it looks like we're going in the food services training business of minorities. Thank you very much. He says, and then Dizzy Gillespie and Count Basie and Herbie Hancock and Spyro Gyra and Billy Taylor and a few of the jazz people came by and said, you know, you should actually give a jazz concert here. He said, I don't have the money for an auditorium. They said, yeah, but you've got these food contracts of GlaxoSmithKline Wellcome and 5 years of future sales of your art for the boardrooms of corporate America. And if we took that and we built a 600-seater auditorium, which is exactly what they did, he says, and the greatest jazz people on the planet came and gave a music concert in my jazz auditorium in the middle of the worst part of Pittsburgh. And they donated the lifetime rights to the music to me. He says, and we won a Grammy, that DVD, we won a Grammy. He says, and I have the lifetime right. He said, I'm that close to doing a deal with Howard Schultz of Starbucks that my award-winning Grammy DVD is going to be sold next to every single Starbucks cash register on planet Earth so that I can build more of these centers and save more kids' lives. And then the lights come at MDRT, and this is why you go to the $1 million round table, the lights cover. And he says, let me give you the facts. He says, it's 49 grand a year to keep a kid in prison. 60% of them back inside within 6 months of release. He says, it's 25 grand a year to send the same kid to the University of Pittsburgh Medical School. It's almost half to send them to medical school than to send them to prison. He says, give me 7 grand, I'll graduate that kid through all 18 of my vocational training programs, and 93% of them get a job within 2 weeks of graduating from one of my vocational training programs. He says, do the math, we're going to bankrupt the country. He says, ain't no politician who's going to solve this problem, because they...
We hope you enjoyed the last session. Our ice cream break is going on now. We just want to let you know that that is in rooms 2265 and 2267. At the conclusion of that, we'll start our next session at 2:50. Thank you. Enjoy the rest of the afternoon.
I appreciate that, but I'm not done with it yet. Thank you. I was just getting to the punchline. Now, here's the key. Here's the key, folks. He says it ain't the politicians who are going to solve the problem because they've proved themselves pathologically capable of getting anything done except getting re-elected. He goes, it's the good guys, the people in this room using a little bit of your time, a little bit of your money, a little bit of your expertise, a little bit of your friends who are going to get it done. He says, because I'm going to build one of these centers in every city in the United States. And I'm not so crazy as the people who said, what are you doing building an art center with no locks on the door and serving gourmet food to the poor kids in the middle of the worst part of Pittsburgh? Have you lost your mind? I was on the phone with Strickland the other day because we've launched a foundation to build schools for kids with autism in Canada because that's the next plague that people don't want to confront. And Strickland said, yeah, buddy, I remember 1999. He says, you come on down. He says, you can use the model of our art centers. He says, we can duplicate the same thing. I'd love to help you. And you know something, I want to show you a video, and then I'm going to tell you for 2 minutes at the end of this 2 minute video exactly what I want you to do with this. Because if you ignore the rest of my message from today and all you do is this, your business owning clients will get caught up. You're seeing a business owning client and they need a $200,000 policy. Find out from underwriting if they'll do 260. Find out if they'll do 300. Okay? Separately issued policy, which the companies kind of like because they get the service fee twice instead of once. You say to them, who would you like to help in the community? We're happy to go with an extra $100,000 worth of life insurance. Owner and beneficiary being the Baptist church, the Catholic church, the mosque, the synagogue, the home for the women's shelter that you're going to build or whatever. And would you help me? Because I am on a mission this year. My mission this year is to raise $1 million for Utah charities, $2 million, $10 million. I'm on a mission to raise $100 million for Utah charities in the next 5 years. That means I've got a lot of pressure. I've got to do $20 million a year. And all you've got to do is give them the Strickland DVD to watch. You give your business owner this DVD, and I'll give you a little taste of what he looks like. And you say, I want you to watch this before I see you next time, Van. And I'll see you to discuss your final elements of your financial planning. And people get caught up in this. I have advisors doing evenings of giving in Rotary clubs where people take out 50 to 100 grand policies, 50 people at a time, and they leave the money to the Rotary Foundation. What a wonderful concept, because then the next Rotary club is interested in having you around. Okay, we're becoming an irreligious society. I don't know if you've noticed, the kids, you can't get them to go to church unless they got their PSP or they got their iPad with them, right? And the kids, their goal is not to stay in Utah when they graduate from BYU. They want to go to Dubai, they want to go to Dublin, they want to go to Melbourne, Australia, which they've seen on Google and on Facebook and on YouTube. So the religious ministers will tell you we've got a major fundraising problem in terms of financially securing the future of our churches and our religious congregations. Will you start doing this and show this DVD to Pastor Michael? Because here's the point before I finish with the video. Pastor Michael is the William Strickland in your community. There's William Stricklands in your community that if they received $1 million to get going, they could make a huge difference in the lives of those less fortunate than us. And you start engaging your clients in this conversation. So let's take a look. This is Bill Strickland speaking at another conference. And then I'm going to send you folks, as long as I got your card, how to get this from MDRT. I'm the biggest promoter of their DVDs. And they kind of like me there, so you'll get a discount if you use my name. Here's Strickland telling a little story. Relating to
when I was out there at the Silicon Valley, I met another guy, came out of the audience. This kid said, man, what a presentation. I said, thanks, man. What do you do for a living? He said, well, I built a company called eBay. I said, oh, that's cool, you got a card. Remember, I ain't the techie guy, I didn't know what eBay was, man. So I stuck the guy's card in my pocket, and I went back to Pittsburgh, and I asked one of the little techie kids, I says, what is eBay? I said, holy smokes, I met the guy that built the company. So I called him up, and I said, Mr. Skull, I've come to have a much deeper appreciation of who you are, man. And he laughed, he said, I thought you'd figure it out sooner or later. You're really on to something. Here's $500,000. I said, what's that for? He says, your first replication. And against all probability, Jeff Skull and I have become very close friends. He's got $5 billion. He's 40 years old, and he's a good guy. And I was sitting in his mansion in Palo Alto one night, and I said, Jeff, what do you need me for, man? You got $5 billion. You're 40 years old. What do you need with a black guy from Pittsburgh for with one program? He said, during your whole presentation, there was only one word in my mind. I said, what was that? He said, scalable. I think you're scalable just like eBay. So he gave me a pile of money. We hired a couple of guys from the Harvard Business School. We wrote a business plan and created a division called the National Center for Arts and Technology. And we're starting to build centers, man. This is the first one that's open in San Francisco. There's the space. That's Jeff on the right, Billy Wong. The kids in the middle. This is what it's going to look like on San Francisco Bay someday. This is the one that's now open in Cincinnati called the Cincinnati Center for Arts and Technology. The fellow that owns the Cincinnati Reds put up a big chunk of the money, and it's doing fine. And we have doubled the graduation rate for the Cincinnati public school system in 12 months, and I don't live in Cincinnati, I live in Pittsburgh. So you can't say it's me, it's the value proposition. There's the space, digital imaging, they're training technicians for Toyota. This is the newest one. Doug DeVos from Amway and a guy named Jim Hackett from Steelcase heard me speak. They came to Pittsburgh and loved the place, and Hackett, which is the chairman of Steelcase, a furniture company, said, man, this building is fabulous. My only criticism is your chairs are getting a little old. I said, well, last time I heard about Steelcase was in the furniture business. And he said, we are, and we're going to re-engineer you with all of our furniture. So in exchange for that, he gets a slide in my slideshow. It now costs $500,000 to get a slide in my slideshow. This is the building. Downtown Grand Rapids, it looks better than this. It looks like the Starship Enterprise, and we got the poor people in the next century, and they're doing fine.
So buy the DVD, okay? Send it to, I don't know who's been doing what on this BYU computer here. Funny pictures there. It ain't my computer. But buy the DVD. Give it to business owners to look at. Say to them, what are you going to do through your planning to give back to the community? Will you assist me? We've adopted. We've taken over. We'd like to build a home. There's a hospital that needs help, etc. You'd be amazed at what starts happening. Once again, thank you for investing your time with me. I know there's some other speakers you'll see this afternoon. If you want to join me for the program starting in October, it'd be awesome to have you. Get me your form by tomorrow if you want to get that early bird discount. You'll only start paying in October. But regardless of that, make sure that I do get your cards, that I can send you all these slides, and enjoy the rest of the symposium. Not that you can't stay.